rocket that misfired by the so-called Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Why do you think that our own security services and indeed our own Prime Minister haven't yet reached that judgment?
Well, it will be American collection capabilities that are optimised to detect this. And I think we should have quite a lot of respect for their conclusions, even if, as they say, they're still emerging. But I think in due course they'll be able to be fairly definitive about this.
And do you think your former organisation can be definitive about this?
Well, we're all members of the Five Eyes Alliance. We will be able to work together. I think there's also a common sense test here, which I've been using all day ever since I saw these horrific images, which is that Israel knows it's in the court of public opinion. It understands that. And I think for it to do anything other than tell the truth as it sees it would be extremely dangerous.
Can I just ask on one aspect of this? A lot of people have focused on a video that, you know, Israel allegedly released, which analysts have said is a fake video of, you know, alleged members of Hamas talking about a failed attempt by the PIJ. Do you have any sense of that at all?
I think Israel will be completely nuts to try anything like that, and I very much doubt it's the case.
So you think, again, it's another example of essentially people, it's some kind of fakery, but we're just not sure?
Yeah.
Yeah, OK. Can I just ask a sort of related question? I mean, I sort of referred to it, you know, in my opening remarks. We live in a world where people don't trust authority anymore. Does it actually matter terribly much if we get to the bottom of it when millions of people won't believe us?
That was going to be my point, Robert. I think probably not. It's moot. I mean, I think the question is not whether it's objectively true, but whether that fact cuts through. Mm. And I think, like you, I doubt that it will in these circumstances.
Now, a land invasion does seem imminent. Do you think actually Israel does have any alternative to a land invasion?
Israel is, as has come out in the conversation already, I think stuck between two imperatives, which will dictate whether this escalates or not. On the one hand, they have a right to defend themselves, and that is one that we should support, and they need to strike against the military infrastructure of Hamas, and it would be extraordinary if they didn't do that. On the other hand, as has come out in this conversation, the crimes of Hamas are not the crimes of the Palestinian people. And on a more practical level, speaking from a counter-terrorism perspective, you must not act out the script that is being written to you by your opponents. That's the big risk. Terrorism isn't just about the action, horrific though it is. It's about the reaction. And you need to think carefully if you're being driven in one direction by these acts.
So you don't want to turn others into terrorists, is what you're effectively
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely.
How great is the risk, in your view, of the conflict spreading? We've seen some skirmishes involving Hezbollah and Israel. Hasn't turned into anything, you know, absolutely appalling yet. But how great is the risk?
I don't think it is an imminent risk, I am pleased to say. Now, there is a scenario, indeed, the script that Hamas has written is that a broad and sustained reaction from Israel in Gaza that is not seen as proportionate draws in the other groups around the borders of Israel and then serves to internationalize the conflict with disastrous consequences. And that is still a possibility. It's something we should all worry about. In practice, looking at this, it's clear that the states in the region, the United States, and despite the rhetoric, I think even Iran are all invested in somehow stopping this getting out of control. Now, that's not something that is foolproof. We know from wars in the past that even when people don't intend it to get out of hand, it does.
Yeah.
But it looks like people are incentivised in the right way.
I'm trying to contain it a bit. In terms of the motives for Hamas, I've heard quite a lot of people suggest that this was an attempt, and it seems to have succeeded, to disrupt Israel's historic settlement with Saudi Arabia, which was about to be signed. Do you think Hamas was doing this explicitly on, some would say, Iran's instructions to blow up that settlement?
No intelligence to that effect has come out, and the US have been really clear that it's not there at the moment. And that goes back to what I was saying before. People are being extremely careful what they say about this.
Right. There's a sort of common sense view, isn't there?
I actually think I don't have access to intelligence. I think it is unlikely.
Okay.
That, the relationship... So let's be clear. Iran are culpable.
Mm.
They pay for and train and equip Hamas. So they bear moral responsibility. But it's going too far to say that Hamas is under the direct operational control from Tehran. It's not that. They're on different sides of the theological debate.
Yeah.
And it's not that simple. And frankly, the timing doesn't work. I think this attack will have been a long time in the preparation. Saudi negotiations have only come to a head recently. But what I will say is this, and this is a sign that Hamas are operating as much on the basis of weakness than strength. They, as a group, I think, felt that they were being marginalized by an inability to get traction within Israel with their hardcore rejectionist narrative, but also this process of a normalization, which they would have been looking at aghast, because correctly they would have identified that this was a thing that was going to marginalize them and make their message of hate and separation less relevant to people in the region. That enough, I think, on their terms, will have been sufficient to make them act.
Okay, very interesting. Look, very briefly, because we're almost out of time, I have heard suggestions from some of your sort of intelligence colleagues that Putin may in some way have been involved before the attack. Can you see how and why he might have been involved?
I don't buy it, but it is undeniably true that he is a beneficiary of what has happened. And it is interesting.
And how is he a beneficiary?
Well, because you see this thing, which would almost have been a cartoon or the start of a joke even a year ago, the axis of resistance, Iran, North Korea and Russia. Well, I think they're genuinely becoming mutually dependent on each other for material support in the context of this illegal war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
It's tying them together. So whereas I think in the past Russia would have tried to play a more even-handed role in the hope essentially of playing both ends off against the middle.
Yeah.
Now anything is bad for America is seen as good for Russia. And frankly, their first duty is now to their new Iranian friends.
Yeah. Depressing times, but you're always enlightening. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Anushka, I think you've got a couple of things you want to share with us.
Yeah, we've been talking to a pollster in Israel, Dalia Scheindlin, to get a sense of the reaction of Israeli Jews. She's written up some of her work in the Haaretz newspaper. And firstly, when asked what immediate response they want to the attacks, over half said they want Israel to occupy the entire Gaza Strip through an IDF ground invasion. Fewer than 10% wanted just tactical strikes aimed only at Hamas's terror infrastructure. So a clear desire for a punishing military response now, but more mixed views in the longer term. According to this survey, 30% want an Israeli military government to take total control of Gaza, but 37% think that once Hamas has been dismantled, then they should leave. And another third want the internationally recognised Palestinian Authority to take over. Now, in separate polling from Tel Aviv University, published in The Economist, there is also a lot of anger aimed at the Israeli government. This asks, is the government responsible for the collapse of defence systems that failed to prevent the Hamas attack? And this green column is an overwhelming yes, 87%, with 53%, the light green bit, saying they have very large responsibility, only 7% saying the government is not responsible. And when this is over, many want to see resignations. 43% say Netanyahu and the defence minister should go. Another 13% think just the prime minister should resign. So 56% in total.
An interview that actually I conducted a little bit earlier today with the former director of the CIA. He's also the author of a new military book, had a lot of experience, particularly in the Middle East as a general. And I started by asking him what he thought of President Biden's speech today in Israel.
It was not just symbolic. I think it was also substantive. But the other component, which was, of course, to engage some of the key leaders of Arab states and then of the Palestinian Authority, obviously he couldn't do in person. That is unfortunate because I think he's probably trying to help the Israelis determine the answer to what then, which is undoubtedly what they are grappling with, and I'm sure that their military leadership is grappling with, as they determine what happens after Hamas has been destroyed as a terrorist entity, also the Islamic Jihad, and after they dismantle what is essentially the government of the territory, which is the Hamas political wing. And they have said that they intend to dismantle it as well. Well, if you do that, and if you're the military force that has achieved that, you own that until you find someone to whom you can hand it off.
So I wanted to ask you, I wanted to ask you about that, because you are somebody who has rooted out terrorist organizations in the past. Is it practical and doable to destroy Hamas?
It's doable, but it will come at very considerable cost to Israeli soldiers, obviously to the enemy here, the terrorist groups, Hamas and Islamic Jihad, and to innocent civilians. And there will be enormous damage and destruction to civilian infrastructure. So again, I think, and there's no predicting how long it will take, but it's not going to be a 100-hour war like the first Gulf War.
And just to be clear, it has to be a land invasion, does it? You can't do this kind of thing through aerial bombardment. The troops have to go in.
That's correct. And so you can expect to face everything from fighters who don't wear uniforms and use human shields, civilians and or the hostages, which number nearly 200 apparently, tunnels. There will be improvised explosive devices. There will be suicide bombers. There will be buildings that blow up. All of this you should expect. So the challenges just from a tactical perspective of doing this are enormous, but it then increases really the importance of ensuring that you know what's going to follow that.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. I wanted to ask you about that. Talking to senior diplomats from the area, they say it's very hard to achieve, but they think the best hope would be to somehow reconfigure Gaza in the way that it had been, you know, decades ago as a sort of UN protectorate. What do you think of that?
Well, I think any approach that allows the Israeli military, because they're going to own this, keep in mind again, they're not just going to destroy the extremist elements, Hamas and Islamic Jihad. They also intend, according to the Israeli political authorities, to dismantle the Hamas political wing. Mm. So that means that you are eliminating or, again, dismantling the structure that is essentially the government that provides the basic social services, that runs schools, clinics, hospitals, oversees the economy, provides rule of law such as it is, et cetera. And if you, again, dismantle that, there has to be something to replace it.
Could the UN run the place? I mean, is that doable?
I don't think the UN can run it, but you could have an interim international authority of some type. But it's going to take some very substantial contributions. It would be a great time for those countries in the region that have such concern for the Palestinians, not just to contribute financially, although that will be very important as well. And the reconstruction requirements are going to be enormous. But also there's going to have to be a hard edge to this, because whoever it is that takes over Gaza from the Israelis when they do withdraw after having achieved their mission, you're going to have a counterinsurgency campaign that will need to be conducted, because the remnants, there will be remnants of Hamas. There are some that have probably already fled Gaza. Mm. There will be remnants of the Islamic Jihad. There will be others that will be supported by countries like Iran and so forth that will try to take over Gaza once again. So this is not a trivial task. This is not just handing out humanitarian assistance and getting things going again. This is much more substantial than that.
It's a total reconstruction. And just in that context, what do you think your president meant when he said to Prime Minister Netanyahu today that he urged him not to make what he called the rage fueled mistakes that he said the U.S. made after 9/11. What does he mean by that?
I guess you'd have to ask them, but certainly I think it's understandable to recognize the desire for revenge. I mean, we were burning with a desire for vengeance here in the United States after sustaining casualties that on a per capita basis were far, far less than those in Israel. We lost nearly 3,000 innocent civilians in the 9/11 attacks. Israel lost 1,300 innocent civilians, which equates per capita, it would be over, well over 40,000 Americans. So again, it's very understandable to want to take revenge, to seek vengeance, and to destroy, not just mow the grass at a lower level and allow it to grow back, to truly uproot Hamas and the Islamic Jihad.
General Petraeus, fascinating as always. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Privileged to be with you. Thank you.